You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, folks, welcome back, everybody. In the next hour, we will be in Australia. We just went to the mother country, the mother continent and the mother country for so many of us. We were in England with Nick Griffin in the last hour. This march around the world is out of control tonight. I mean, you know, throughout this particular month, we showcase some of our people's greatest representatives throughout Europe and beyond. As we seek to discover, we take a yearly pulse on how our people are doing throughout the Western world. And we're doing that tonight. But tonight, I think it's the first time in the years we've been doing this that we have four guests, not just from four different countries. That would be ambitious enough. Four guests tonight from four different continents, all live. Nothing is pre-recorded. These people stay up to unimaginable hours to accommodate us. Nick Griffin now just past 1 a.m. in the U.K. He was staying up burning the midnight oil. We'll actually be talking to Drew Frazier in the next hour from Australia. We'll be talking to him in the future. It's Saturday. It's Sunday afternoon in Australia, as we said here in broadcast live on Saturday night. And every time we have Drew on, it's just stretches the meager capabilities of my mind to even comprehend how we do all of this. But it's a lot of fun, is it not? And how about these guys? How about Nick Griffin gang? This is a fun show and a fun series to produce every year. And last week, of course, we were in Croatia with Tom Sunic, who just hit it out of the park. Paul Fromm, par excellence. And tonight we're all over the place. England, Australia, going back to Canada with Remy Tremblay. In just a few minutes, actually, and then later this hour, we're going to dip down into Brazil and talk to our South American correspondent. We are everywhere our people are, and we hope you're enjoying this half as much as we enjoy producing it. So, and it hasn't been a slow start to the year at large. I mean, you know, just at the very dawn of 2024 in the first weeks of January, we had Augustus Invictus and Brother Nathaniel on the very same show back to back to kick off the year. Then David Zutty from the Homeland Institute, Jose Nino, and Taylor Young from Antelope Hill Publishing. And then we had that we were down in Orlando with Steve King. We had Steve King, a former representative, also a fellow former United States Congressman Steve Stockman, along with Peter Brimelow and Michael Gaddy for that show on immigration and the Texas border. Then straight into the Ladies Night Valentine's Day broadcast with Kim, Lacey, Janice, Courtney, and Cyan, and Lauren Witzke was also on that program. Then a couple of great shows, Sam Dixon, special two-hour show on February 17th talking about the Putin Tucker Carlson interview and wider issues related to that. Then Jason Kuna a couple of weeks ago, and then, of course, kicking off March Around the World last week with Tom Sunich and Paul Fromm. And Paul Kersey is our intergalactic correspondent, we called him, so we could squeeze him in. I actually have made a mistake, folks, and it's all on me. We've been so busy. I mean, what do you expect? What can I do? I forgot to mention last week, and now we're 9 days into it, and I have dug myself a bit of a hole, and we have a bit of a deficit. Well, it's not your fault. I didn't tell you. Maybe you got a letter in the mail, but our first quarter fundraising drive has officially kicked off. It kicked off on March 1st. We've gotten off to a slow start because we were so busy last week. I failed to mention it, but we are underway. There is no show like TPC now in its 20th year. What makes the show great is the audience and the guests. I appreciate you putting up with me, but the audience and the guests, just to have be able to platform people like, well, the names we just rattled off and so many more that are regulars on the program that you'll hear from throughout the rest of the year and in previous years. But this is something, we have done something here remarkable. I mean, we have made a mark and planted a flag, but we don't do it without you. I mean, it wasn't easy to get to 20 years, but we wouldn't have gotten there at all without you. And of course, our quarterly fundraising appeals are what makes the difference as to whether or not we're here or we're dead. And you see so many different individuals and activists and organizations come and go. It's a tough way to row to hoe, as my grandfathers might have put it. But we have done remarkable work together, and that's the key word, is together, always together. And we do need your help now. Our first quarter fundraising drive kicked off last week, and your response is vitally important. Now, you know, we have been deplatformed and censored by every credit card processing company in the universe and by all major social media platforms. So there's only one way to support the show if you want to keep us going, and that's the good old USPS. You got to mail it in. But we appreciate you taking that extra effort. For those who do donate $100 or more, everything matters. $5 matters. $5 is big to us. But if you can give $100 or more, that just about pays postage these days. We will give you an autographed copy of Steve King, the aforementioned Steve King's book, Walking Through the Fire, My Fight for the Heart and Soul of America. We have to have your support to stay on the air. I don't know if there's any other organization that does what TPC does. I hate to ask for support. It's embarrassing even to receive it, although I would rather survive than not. And so we ask and we gratefully receive your heartfelt contributions. But I couldn't possibly do it by even just saying thank you for it. Every quarter, we have always given you a premium. Now, maybe you don't necessarily want them. You donate to the show anyway, or maybe you're donating just to get the premium, or who knows. But I couldn't possibly accept it without sending you something back. So we always try to come up with something that we think you'll like. And this quarter, it is Steve King's book, Walking Through the Fire, and it's autographed. It's autographed, and I watched him autograph all of these books. He brought them down to Orlando in his car, all of these boxes. And his hand was smoking by the time he finished signing all of these books and gave them to us. And it was just very nice of him to do that. And it is an interesting book, and you'll get it, not just his book, but an autographed copy. We always like to go the extra mile. So there you go. That's we had to take a brief pause from our international travels to give you this announcement that we are in our vitally, crucially important first quarter fundraising drive, and it's gotten off to a slow start because of me. I've been too busy to even fundraise. What a great show last week, though. Tom Sunich, Paul Fromm, Paul Kersey. Tonight, Nick Griffin, Remy Tremblay, Drew Frazier, and our South American correspondent. We can't reveal his name. He is not a part of the outspoken movement, but he is a fellow traveler and a great guy. Great guy. Sees it all the way as we do, and I'm privileged to know him. And I actually had the chance to see him in Florida just a few weeks ago when I was down there with Steve King. So anyway, he's going to be calling in from Brazil tonight. A lot coming up. But so we've been busy, but not too busy. Now, I had to squeeze out a segment to remind you that if you are a regular supporter of TPC, by now, even as slow as the post office delivers first-class mail, you should have received a letter from us that was mailed out on March the 4th. We mailed it out on March the 4th. It should be to you now, and you can get the latest quarterly update and the appeal and the premium and everything that I just mentioned here, and then some, because there's actually some wonderful testimonials there. We're going to be showcasing throughout this, our 20th anniversary year, testimonials from Virginia Abernathy, Jared Taylor, Kevin McDonald, and Peter Brimelow in this particular letter that we sent out. And what being associated with the show has meant to them over all of these years. And again, this is the thing that I am so proud about this particular show for, and this particular effort, is the community that we have built. It, you know, people say family, 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 you know, fling it around in a hyperbolic way, but we really are a family here. We have suffered together. We have fought together. We have strived together. And all of these guests that we so regularly feature, I mean, these are brothers and sisters. I mean, these are people I would do anything for, and you are too, ladies and gentlemen, the people who have supported us all of these years. I'm not here without you. You've given me a life worth living. I can look back on my life already. If this is the last night I live, it was a life worth living. This was a life that I wanted to be. It's like in The Godfather. This is the life that we have chosen. This is the only life I've known, but the only life I ever wanted to know, and you made it happen. And I appreciate that. And I hope in return for your support, we've been able to not just give you some cool gifts for whatever appeal you're responding to, but I hope we've been able, in your opinion, to deliver you results that have been worthy of your support, because that's what it's all about in the end. And all about in the end, it is creating a better future for our people and a future world that our ancestors will inherit that has been made better by our collective sacrifice. You financially, us out here, you know, bearing the scars, and it takes all of us. Everybody has to play their role on the team. We fight for our past, our present, and our future, and we want to continue to fight for our future, and we need your support to do so. So if you received that letter in the mail this week, please consider putting something in the envelope, sending it back. And this is a big year for us, 20 years, an election year, and we're doing the best we can. Thanks to you. We'll be back with Remy Tremblay. Back to Canada next. Hey friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interests include contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America. Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity. The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism. Speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
And welcome back, everybody, as TPC's March Around the World continues. Right now, we're doing two things tonight we've never done before in this series, which even after 20 years on the radio, we just started this series back in 2020. It was the year of COVID, and we were doing different things, and there was so much different about that year. But we kicked this off in 2020, and it has, even after 20 years, these last 4 years, I say this, and this has become my favorite month of the year, my favorite series to produce. I love Confederate History Month. It is the nearest and dearest to my heart, but this is there's something fun about going around and talking to our people all around the world and just talking to these people and hearing what's going on at these distant ports of call. But the two things we're doing tonight that we've never done before, number one, as I mentioned earlier, we're four guests tonight from four different continents, all right? Europe, North America, South America, and Australia. That's something. And then number two, this is the first time during our March Around the World series that we've had two featured guests from the same country. Last week you heard from Paul Fromm. Tonight, back with us, Remy Tremblay. And Remy, of course, is editor of a French language magazine based in Quebec. And he's going to follow up on Paul Fromm's report last week about the battle for free speech in the Great White North. Remy missed last year's installment. It's great to have you back. Remy, how are you in Canada tonight?
Well, I'm fine, and I thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you and to talk to your listeners. It's a great show, and I'm very glad you invited me tonight.
Well, I'm very glad you had the ability to attend. I would have mentioned the name of your incredible magazine, for which I have had the honor of being interviewed in. I would have mentioned the name of it if only I could pronounce it. Can you give us the pronunciation again?
Well, yes, it is Le Harfang, which means snow owl.
And this is a magazine that covers what issues and why?
Well, basically, it is devoted to the survival of French Canadians in Canada. So we mostly talk about like different issues related to our survival as a people. We can talk about demographics, politics. Mass immigration is one of the recurring subjects, of course, and of course, freedom of speech as well, as we need it if we're in order to fight for like our rights and for our survival.
And we need more of that. And see, this is interesting to me. And if you don't mind me paying you this compliment, English is not your native tongue, is it, Remy?
Oh, no, it's not. And I'm sorry for that. I don't get to practice like that often.
No. You speak English. No. My friend. No. That is a compliment. That is not saying, oh, well, if you wonder why he's not speaking good English, it's because it's not his native tongue. No, I that is not it. You speak better English than I do. And to me, it is just remarkable that it could be not your native tongue. I mean, imagine me trying to give a French an interview for a French radio program. It would never happen. I wouldn't have the first word. But it is interesting because you live in Canada, though. And I guess a lot of people here in America would think of Canada as just being our neighbor to the north. It's predominantly white and English, but there is a section of Canada that is native French speakers and predominantly French speakers. And, of course, I know you shared with me that you listened to the interview with Paul Fromm last week. What would you say are the differences between the part of Canada that is native French speaking and the majority of Canada, which obviously speaks English?
Well, it is extremely different. First, we're based French Canadians are in a province, mostly in the province of Quebec, with some living in north of Ontario and north of New Brunswick as well, what we call the Acadians. Now, I would say that like we have a stronger sense of identity than most English Canadians. Most English Canadians, and I don't want to be judgmental or anything, but they seem to consider themselves as opposed to like Americans. So their culture is going to be based on the fact that they're not Americans. As opposed to us, we have a very strong sense of community. And it is a reason why issues like immigration are perceived in a very different way in Quebec than the rest of Canada. Things such as, like words as, such as nationalist are not perceived the same. In Quebec, even liberals call themselves nationalists. And even liberals like want to preserve language and our way of life. Well, at least this is what they say, but basically there's a strong sense of identity, a stronger sense of identity in Quebec.
Okay, that's very interesting. I mean, I think we have talked about this before, but that's a fantastic answer, and it's been so long that I couldn't even remember exactly the different, if you were to compare and contrast French Canada from English-speaking Canada. And so would you say that with regards to our issues, the issues of importance, identity, immigration, so on and so forth, you go on down the line, would you say that that pocket of French-speaking Canadians have a better understanding of these issues, or is that a separate question entirely?
Oh, right now, like I'm not sure how it plays in the rest of Canada, but right now, immigration is a very hot topic in Quebec. And we have Quebec is the only province where we do manage our own immigration policies up to a certain extent. At a certain extent, we need to deal with the federal government. And right now, there's a clash between the federal government that says we need to increase immigration. We need like 500,000 newcomers every year. And like the premier, Quebec's premier, François Legault, who basically says, no, we cannot like have more immigrants right now. And as a matter of fact, the opposition is pushing for having less immigrants next year. So it really is not the same debate as opposed to like the conservatives in Ottawa. I don't even think they're advocating for decrease of immigration. But in Quebec, that's pretty much a consensus. Like most people agree that we need to decrease drastically like the numbers in terms of immigration.
All right. Interesting. And I just wanted to make that compare and contrast between you and Paul, who I know you both have a great mutual respect for one another, but there is a little bit of difference, being that you're a native speaker of the French language. Obviously, Paul is a native English speaker, and you're not too far from one another as far as the wide expanse of Canada is concerned. But all is interesting. Now, you listened to Paul's interview last week, and I thought that the situation in Canada with regards to the online harms bill is so profound that we ought to revisit it tonight with back-to-back representatives of Canada on this program during this March Around the World. You listened to the Paul Fromm interview. What did you think about it, and what did he leave out? What would you add to the question of how harmful would the online harms bill be if put into law in Canada?
Well, Paul's research issue more in depth, I'd say. And I can hardly add anything to the extent of the law and how it could be applied if it is voted in the parliament. Now, what I see with this law, it's not just a single law in Canada. It goes with, you know, tightening restrictions around the world against nationalists. You can see the same thing in Europe at the moment. You were saying that Paul Fromm was banned from visiting the United States, which is like totally crazy, but we've seen the same thing in Germany last month when the young Austrian identitarian activist Martin Sellner was banned from traveling to Germany, yes, although he has committed no crime. And we talk about like the freedom of speech in Canada, but like 3 days ago in France, they passed a new law. They voted that law, which basically bans hate speech in private conversations. And people like who have like derogatory words in a private conversation could be fined. Could even like be assigned to sensitivity training and everything. I mean, this is not just in Canada right now. We see a stronger repression against like nationalists worldwide. And I'm pretty sure your other guests would say the same thing. It's not just in Canada.
No, it's definitely not just in Canada. And I mentioned to the audience in the last hour with Nick Griffin that I had done a couple of interviews with Nick Griffin and Philip De Winter of Belgium, respectively, for the American Free Press. We're actually doing two interviews. The next one will be with Paul Fromm, followed by Tom Sunich, both of whom were on the show last week, for the next couple of issues of American Free Press. And we're talking about these issues, free speech, immigration, so on and so forth. And that was actually a question I posed to Paul in this print interview. We didn't ask this on the program last week, but in the print interview I asked, how would you compare and contrast, and I'll ask you this as well, Remy, right now, we have about a minute before the break, how would you compare and contrast the restrictions on free speech from America, between America, Canada, and places like Germany, where you're outright just, in the UK as well, where you're outright imprisoned for violating the sensibilities of political correctness?
Oh, yeah. I would say that the difference between America and the rest, I definitely put Canada along with Germany and most of European countries where restrictions are judicial. In America, it's going to be more soft totalitarianism, meaning that people will be marginalized.
Good
people
word.
Will lose their job, as opposed to Canada and the rest in Europe, where we can actually go to jail. And, of course, we'll be marginalized as well, and we're going to lose our job, and we're going to face repression. That's part of a whole arsenal against nationalists. And everybody who has dissident views, everybody who opposes mass immigration, or who just like wants his people to remain its people, you know, that's basically what we cannot say. That's considered to be hate speech.
All right, let's pause right there with Remy Tremblay. We will come back as we continue this conversation about the online harms bill. So ominous, I think, that we have invited not one but two of our finest, our people's finest representatives from Canada, Paul Fromm and Remy Tremblay, in back-to-back weeks to talk about it. We'll continue the conversation and then get into something else with Remy next.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters.
A lot of our public expense, that's cost a lot of money, raising the deficit. Guess what? We cut the deficit. It cut the deficit. $1 trillion. The last guy ballooned the deficit.
President Biden, fresh off the State of the Union, campaigning in Philadelphia Friday, taking on a similar tone to the one he delivers at the State of the Union speech Thursday night at the Capitol.
Folks, our freedoms really are in the ballot this November. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans are trying to take away our freedoms. That's not an exaggeration. Well, guess what? We will not let him.
Now, before boarding Air Force One to campaign in Philly, reporters asking the president if he'll debate former President Trump if he is the Republican nominee. To that, Biden replies,
"It depends on his behavior."
The president saying there, "It depends on his behavior." Former President Trump taking to his social media platform, Truth Social, to weigh in on Biden's State of the Union address.
Joe Biden is on the run from his record and lying like crazy to try and escape accountability for the horrific devastation he and his party have created, all the while they continue the very policies that are causing this horror show to go. We cannot take it any longer as a country.
It appears former President Trump's top two picks will take over leadership for the Republican National Committee. Here's USA's John Schaefer with details.
Michael Whatley, the chairman of the North Carolina GOP, has assumed the role of chair for the Republican National Committee. He succeeds Ronna McDaniel, who stepped down from that position. Laura Trump has been appointed as the RNC's new co-chair.
And daylight saving time begins this weekend. We spring forward Sunday at 2 a.m., so it stays lighter later. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted car to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-804-7211. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your car donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-804-7211. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-804-7211 to donate your unwanted car to Patriotic Hearts.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixie's Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
Back with Remy Tremblay, a French-Canadian journalist, editor of the magazine there, based out of Quebec. Remy, before we can, and also, but he is published everywhere, American Renaissance, the Occidental Quarterly, American Free Press. I see his articles in there, here and abroad, all around the world. You can find Remy Tremblay. I mean, he is that kind of guy. But Remy, if they want to get your publication, how do they find it?
Well, the easiest way would be to send me an email at learfin@protonmail.com. Now, let me spit it out for you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you just lost everybody in the audience with that.
Yeah, so I'm going to spit it out. Okay, it's learfang@protonmail.com.
I'm going to ask this attorney from Washington, D.C., who just contacted me live as we're on the air here now. Love Quebec. Been there a dozen times or so, one into the other as he listens live. So, my friend, I will expect you to send an email to Remy and let him know that and get the publication. It is fantastic, although you better be able to read French.
But yeah. Otherwise, it might be problematic.
But this is now, anyway, Remy, I appreciate your work in any language. It's all for a commonality. It's our common people. And we may be cousins. We may speak different languages, and we may be from different countries and even different continents. But that's what this month is all about here on TPC, bringing us together by the ties that bind. And there is a commonality there, and that's what we're celebrating during this our march around the world. Remy, going back to the issue of the online harms bill, talking with Paul Fromm about that last week, now continuing in it for one more segment with you very briefly. But a lot of pushback to this. Let's go through these questions briskly. Have you been surprised at the pushback that has sort of cropped up globally in opposition to this really extremist? I mean, they talk about us being the extremists. So much of what the left says about us is pure projection. Have you been surprised at the pushback against this?
Well, we're talking about differences between Quebec and the rest of Canada. And when it comes to immigration, Quebecers are more sensitive to immigration issues. But that bill that should have been like discussed in like every major outlet has not been discussed in French, like Canadian outlets. There is no like media that has talked about it. So in Quebec, there was no pushback. There was no reaction. Actually, when we started talking about it, like on a social platforms, some people ask us for our sources, and we had to refer like to English newspapers, as there was nothing written in French. So I am extremely surprised by the absence of pushback in Quebec. And this really worries me. Yeah, in Quebec.
But if you look globally, in Quebec itself, it's been kind of oblivious. But do you think there has been, I mean, at least to me, if you Google online harms bill, and I don't know what it has been, you know, between now and the last 10 days, but you would see, you know, quite a bit of articles out there saying, you know, this is a bridge too far. This is not the way to go. I have seen that, which normally you would only hear that from our side, globally speaking.
Well, yeah, but I think that, I agree there's been, like, globally a pushback. But what is at stake is very, you know, it's very big, like, risking life in prison for, like, hateful comments online. And the Liberal government will be the one deciding what is hateful and what is not. It's giving a lot of like arbitrary power to the government. And I think it is like what pretty much everybody is scared of. And I think this is the reason why most people like are opposed to that bill.
Because do you see it being passed?
Sorry?
Do you see it being passed? I mean, I asked Paul, of course, you know, no one's an oracle, and political opinions and political projections and predictions are a fool's errand. But, I mean, do you see this being passed in Canada, in Ottawa?
Well, unfortunately, yes. But like Paul said, basically there's a backlog right now in the parliament. So that may be the only reason why it's going to be postponed. And eventually a conservative government will not pass the law. The Section 13 that is being revived here was sacked by Stephen Harper's government. And Stephen Harper was far from a radical, was far from a right-wing conservative, who was pretty much in the center of things. But he sacked Section 13, and I would be very surprised if conservatives decided to support that bill.
All right. We'll put a pin in that right now because it hasn't happened yet, so we'll see what happens. But we've talked about it the last week and then again tonight. Let me ask you this very quickly because we're running short on time, and this is just from an American observer's point of view. You look at the different provinces of Canada. If you were living in Canada, now I can't ask you this because you got to say your province because you're a French Canadian speaker. But if you're coming in from abroad and you wanted to move to Canada, what would be the one province where you would feel at home if you shared our opinions and ideas? What is the most right leaning province of Canada?
Well, I'd say the most a bit like Texas will be Alberta. But there again, it depends if you go to the big cities. And I think it's pretty much the same thing in the United States. You can pretty much feel comfortable in Maine as long as you live in the countryside.
You're not going to be worried. Exactly, but you're in the forest.
Yeah. But I think Alberta is more right-wing when it comes to conservatism. But when it comes to identity, I definitely choose the province of Quebec or even the French parts of New Brunswick.
All right. Very interesting. And we know a good friend, and I hope he's listening tonight, a good friend, longtime supporter of the program. Can't mention his name or his occupation, but he lives up there in Alberta, and he'll know that I'm speaking to him. One more question for you, Remy, before we run out of time. This was another question we didn't have time to get to Paul last week, but amazingly or astonishingly in some ways, the courts in Canada overruled, if I understand correctly, overruled or overturned some COVID-era rulings that they deemed to be unconstitutional. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. Okay, basically, it's the emergency state that was declared by Justin Trudeau. To smash the trucker convoy. Basically, it's the war measures that were invoked by his father when the Quebec separatists in 1970 abducted two officials. They abducted a Quebec minister and a British diplomat, John Cross. Now, the war measures and the emergency measure that were invoked by Justin Trudeau basically lift all the provisions of the Charter of Rights. There is no more Charter of Rights. So it's something extremely arbitrary. At the moment the government decides to impose that, he pretty much has a free go for anything. He can jail people without any warrant. He can seize anything. And this is it's been invoked only twice in the history of Canada, by Trudeau father and Trudeau son. Now, basically, the court said that there was no reason to invoke it. There was no violence. There was no threat to the security and safety of the nation. Because, let's face it, the trucker convoy, it was pretty much like a big sit-in, except that people were sitting in trucks. But it was a peaceful demonstration. There was no, unlike the BLM riots, there was no vandalism, no violence, nothing was torched down, nothing was destroyed. So invoking that, lifting all the constitutional rights of Canadian in order to preserve the safety of Canada was wrong. Everybody knew it was wrong, but now the court said it was wrong.
Well, as left-leaning as Canada appears to be from the layman in America, the layman observer in America, is it remarkable to you that you would get such a ruling? And why has that ruling come down? It just doesn't follow.
Yeah, even if we're very like left leaning, I mean, I can see why we're concerned to be left leaning. You know, it's a matter of like constitutional rights. I mean, you cannot like a government should not have like the possibility to lift.
But it seems like they should have known that in 2020 and not only realized that a half a decade later.
Yeah, but this exactly. But Justin Trudeau knowingly used it without any justification. He did it for political reasons. He did not use it. And this law is supposed to be like in case of an emergency, in case of a war, in case something very big happens. But then he used it because of a protest. He knew that was like a fake justification. Everybody knew it was fake. Nobody felt threatened. Nobody felt like there was going to be a takeover of the state or a coup d'etat. But Justin Trudeau still did it knowingly, betraying like the spirit of the law. He did it because, well, he felt he could not face any criminal.
He got away with it for a while, but now it's been turned back. Well, hope springs eternal, and as long as we have people like Remy Tremblay out there, another one of our featured guests during this our march around the world, we've got a chance. We've got a puncher's chance. Remy, thank you for being on with us tonight. Thank you for representing Canada. Thank you for representing our people. We'll be right back.
Friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interests include contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America, Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity, The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism, speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's advanced distance education program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back. I got to say again, I'm on the road this evening, and I'm not going to reveal any identities or any compromising information, but I've got to say that we are here in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I am with two of the very phenomenal young people I met this weekend. One is her parents were born in Romania, and she's a Native American, the young gentleman was born in Russia, and they are recently married, very young, very impressive, incredibly impressive, I should say. And we had some fantastic conversations. I have talked to a lot of different people this weekend, and including one that was at January 6th and is facing some unfortunate days ahead. But it has been a fantastic gathering, and I want to thank the people who put it on and thank them for having me here this evening. This actually just came up at the last minute, even midweek this week. I didn't expect to be in East Tennessee, but here we are now, and doing it on the fly and doing it remotely and not missing a beat. And in fact, sticking all the landings this evening from England with Nick Griffin. We just went back to Canada for the second time in as many weeks with Remy Tremblay. And now we move down to South America. We move down to Brazil with our South American correspondent. We can't mention his name. He's a little bit undercover, but he has got his finger on the pulse of what's going on down there. And if you can remember, a couple of years ago, you had a very similar situation to what happened here in the United States. You had Donald Trump running against Joe Biden in 2020. You had a Trumpian candidate, Bolsonaro, in Brazil running against Brazil's answer to Biden, Lula. And very interestingly, Lula seemed to have won by the scantest of margins there, very much a nail-biter and a razor-thin margin of victory. And then you had another so-called January 6th, where you had people go in and visit the governmental offices there in Brazil. And, well, our South American correspondent will pick it up from there. My friend, thank you for calling in tonight all the way down from Brazil. And you've got 10 minutes and you got a prepared statement. I want to give you all the time you need to share with us the current situation in Brazil. Go.
Again, so much for letting me be in the show again. It's such an honor. You set the stage, so everybody knows about the January 6th in the U.S. We had our January 8th 2 days later, but 2 years later. It was January 8th, 2023, after the election in 2022 that people protested. It's interesting. After Lula, what I sent you earlier this day, it's about Lula's revenge against everybody that kind of put him in jail and said bad stuff about him. Everybody that stated anything bad about Lula in the press or anywhere else is somewhat, or even in jail or persecuted or in exile. Many of them living in the United States right now, journalists, most of them. So Lula went back to the presidency in January of 2023, very, very angry, with a lot of grudge against everybody. So it's been very, very complicated things down here. So if I pick up some stuff that I sent you earlier this day, so One of prosecutors of Lula back in 2018, he lost his mandate. He was a congressman and he lost his mandate. The judge that sent Lula to jail, he's a senator now. He's about to lose his mandate also, being persecuted. A lot of supporters, people from the January 2008, are either in jail or lost their bank accounts, blocked every assets that they have by court orders, pretty much like, how can I say, judicial dictatorship in the best way that you can think of it. Many of these supporters, I have sent you this also. I don't know if people are following Tucker in X and in his platform right now.
Yeah, I do believe a lot of our people are, in fact.
Yeah, he recently interviewed Bolsonaro's son, Eduardo, he's a congressman here in Brazil. And he's a little bit scared right now. He probably in the near future he's gonna have a visit from the federal police in his house. Many people have received visits from the federal police under court orders, taking computers, files, everything, freezing assets, freezing bank accounts. He's persecuting everybody that said something bad about him. He's very, very
upset. So this is
upset.
The current president of Brazil, Lula, you're talking about, and this is what he's doing. Now, Bolsonaro, interestingly, not only was he the populist, rightist candidate in Brazil, Brazil's answer to Trump. By the way, after his exile. I saw him at a Publix in Florida. I wasn't personally there, but every time I go to Florida, I prefer Publix. This isn't a paid endorsement, sure. But I do like the Publix chain. But I saw him in Publix just like he would be any other guy on social media. But he is banned from running for 8 years. Mm-hmm. Now, they didn't even do that to Trump. I mean, they've tried to do a lot of things to Trump. But Bolsonaro, who was the people's candidate and the former president of Brazil, he is banned from running legally for 8 years. That's remarkable. But, I mean, again, that's what they would do to any of us if they could.
Yeah, this interview from Tucker, Eduardo touches on this. Not very many allegations, isn't so to justify this kind of thing, but they did it. So the judicial system in Brazil is already run by people that the Workers' Party and the party of Lula has been putting there in the Supreme Court since 2008 when Lula started his first term. So this thing about the judiciary and the Supreme Court, this is something very important. This is something that we should be very scared about. This is something that in this interview, Tucker also interviewed one journalist from Brazil. He's in exile. He lives in South Florida. His name is Paulo Figueiredo. And he touches on interesting things. He lost his passport. He cannot travel to Brazil anymore. He lost everything that he has in Brazil. He lost his platform. The media, the TV company that he used to work in Brazil, sent him home after after Lula won the election. These things are always made up by these Supreme Court justices.
I would ask you this very quickly because we're down to our last 2 minutes, and this is just a very quick one-segment visit to Brazil. Perfect. And we thank our South American correspondent and a friend of mine, and I am honored to be able to call you that, to join us this evening.
My honor.
This update, but what would you say when I say our issues? You know what I'm talking about. What would you say is the percentage of the Brazilian population that is congruent or at least amenable to our issues? And would you say that there is a possibility for Bolsonaro to be the beneficiary of a backlash in Brazil the way Trump is currently the beneficiary of it here in America?
I think that right now, maybe Bolsonaro is about half the population backing him up. Because many people didn't like him back because he used to make a lot of bad decisions, bad statements. But now that they have Lula, they have seen how much worse we can get. So I think that many simple people, the people that really get strained by economical issues, they're really in a tough situation right now in Brazil. Brazil is not in an economic...
So like here in America, where the economy has just collapsed, and you have rampant inflation, $20 for a Big Mac, $30 for a haircut. So Bolsonaro would be the natural beneficiary of this if he were able to run. That's the problem. I mean, Trump is able to run. Bolsonaro is not, at least for another few years. Mm-hmm.
So that's what's scary about the Supreme Court kind of judicial dictatorship. Right now, another judge has been put there. So the left always can get, they always put the people that they want. And these people are really bad people. This guy that entered right now to become a Supreme Court justice. I mean, he's awful. He's the worst kind of communist you can think of. And he's going after gun grabs and everything. And so how can they do that? And when Bolsonaro was there, he couldn't pick up like a judge that was decent. The ones that had put them didn't help him. So it's like the same. Trump made awful choices about his Supreme Courts. It's all the same.
The Supreme Court was probably some of his better choices, as bad as they may have been. It certainly was better than how he stacked his administration. But would you say Would you say, with 30 seconds remaining, would you say that there is an opportunity for Brazil to pivot and turn to the right, even in light of all of these Orwellian tactics that have been levied against its people? Are you hopeful for Brazil's future?
If we had fair elections, I guess so, but I don't know. It's a little bit grim right now.
It's a little bit gray. An honest answer from South America. I want to thank you again for coming on tonight, staying up late to join us from your part of Brazil. And always an honor to talk to you and to see you, and we'll see you again soon. We'll be in Australia in the next hour with Drew Frazier. Stay tuned.